Good morning, everybody. I call the Committee on Economic Development, Finance, and Policy to order. Thank you all for joining us. I know we have a full house, so if you could please bring your conversations to the halls or take a seat, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. First, there is a quorum present as well. And can I get a motion to approve the minutes from March 24th, 2023?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carly Katiza Watoon moves to approve the minutes from March 24th, 2023. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. I'm sorry. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Great. Thank you so much. The minutes are approved. Chair Hassan is before us to present House File 3028. Chair Hassan, I do want to also mention that we have the DE and the spreadsheets for the committee are on their way here, so they are being printed out and will be here soon. Looks like some of them are coming around now, so those will be here momentarily. And Chair Hassan, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's with great honor and privilege to present our final bill of the session, House File 3028. There's a song about having more money, which states more money, more problems. While we had ample of money, we also had greater need and more of our communities in dire need of a hand up. We have been working hard for the past few months to build an economy for our state that we can all be proud of. I first want to thank our nonpartisan staff, Anna Shaleen and Ken Savers, for all their work and working late and in the wee hours of the night to put together this bill. I also want to thank our committee administrator, Travis Ree, our CLA, Elijah Henderson, our DFL researcher, Dave Sullivan, and our Republican researcher, Lori Casno. Without all of you, we wouldn't have been able to accomplish anything. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I also want to extend my gratitude to our minority lead, Rep. Kasnick, and our great vice chair, Rep. Hansen, and all of you for making this space a safe space to have a great conversation. In this committee, we have talked a whole lot about equity and wealth building for communities who have been left behind. With many years of disinvestment and underinvestment, many of our communities do not have the means to dig themselves out of the cycle of poverty. They don't have the social safety nets to build wealth and fully embrace the American dream. We also have discussed to address the great need to provide our small businesses and entrepreneurs across the state the resources to thrive. It's one thing to survive, but we don't want our businesses to survive. We want them to thrive. We want Minnesota to be a destination where people want to visit and live. The last 3 years have been challenging for our state and even more challenging for our small businesses with a pandemic that closed many of their doors, amplified inequities in our systems, and put more stress on everyone as our future was uncertain, followed by the tragic murder of George Floyd and the civil unrest that destroyed the cultural corridors of our cities. I guess you can say we have been thrown a lot. While the murder of George Floyd was tragic and heartbreaking, it was also a moment, a turning point moment, that forces us to deal with the disparities that have been persistent in facing us. Racial disparities that face our racial communities because of systemic barriers that were put in place to just protect some group and create an exclusion process. I love numbers because numbers tell stories. So here is some numbers that I'm willing to share. Across the country, the racial wealth gap remains large. In 2021, the median white household had $111,146 in wealth holdings, including cars, homes, and investment, compared to $7,113 for the median black household and $8,348 for the Latino median household. Minnesota is no different. According to a new study by the Wallet Hub, Minnesota has the third largest racial wealth gap in the country. Minnesota scores in this study at 64.93. Only the District of Columbia and Wisconsin score higher than Minnesota, indicating a larger gap. According to other research, Minnesota has the second biggest rate, poverty rate in the nation, 291.78%. The state's home ownership rate gap ranks fourth in the nation, while the median household income gap is fifth largest in the nation. Some of the key factors driving this racial wealth gap include unequal access to capital, more barriers to pursuing higher education opportunities, and underemployment, as well as a generational wealth gap that's a far-fetched for many of our BIPOC communities. Knowing all of this data, we have to be more intentional in reducing disparities and creating opportunities for everybody. We had to build a bill that is transformational and speaks to the persisting systemic gaps we have had for many decades. This budget bill in front of you today funds DEED at its base funding, funds many great bills our members presented in the last few months, starting with the Small Business Partnership, Boundary Water Economic Relief, funding for our cultural corridors in Minneapolis and St. Paul, funding our CDFIs and some of the nonprofits who are the firefighters of our community. These CDFIs, foundations, and nonprofits serve communities at every corner of the state. I hope it was no surprise that we were intentional, transformational, and serious about closing the wealth gap. I also want to thank every Minnesotan who came to this committee and shared their stories and introduced us to their communities. Your stories and our community's needs are invaluable. This is a great bill with many excellent ideas from all of you, so thank you. With that, Madam Chair, I'll let our fiscal staff do the walkthrough of the bill. If we have the, we do? Okay, all right, then I will be quiet.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. And I just want to take a second to say thank you for your leadership. We have had an opportunity to really be inspired about what the future of Minnesota can look like with both a bold vision and a reconciliation at the forefront. I think that's really important. And this transformational moment is really exciting as we look towards what the vision of the future of Minnesota looks like, and we couldn't do it without our fearless leader. So thank you so much, Chair Hassan. And with that, I'll turn it over to nonpartisan staff to do a walkthrough, and I will turn it over to you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, you'll have a spreadsheet that was distributed a moment ago titled 2023 Economic Development Finance in the left corner, and a timestamp updated of 3/27/23 at 11 a.m. The committee's target, as passed by a resolution by Ways and Means, was $750 million above the base in FY 24-25, with $750 million above the base in FY 24-25. For a total target funding of $948,355,000. If you look at line 10 of the spreadsheet, you'll see in the columns to the right-hand side titled DE Amendment, DE minus base, 24-25, DE Amendment Tails, and DE Amendment minus base, FY 26-27. Those will be the columns we'll be discussing today. Line 10 shows the total appropriations for the DE Amendment. You'll see in the column in DE minus base at $750 million above base, so the committee has hit its target. Additionally, line 16 is the total general fund impact, or net, that is also $750 million above base. Madam Chair and members, I'll just go through the changes that were included in the DE for the sake of brevity. Line 43 is the first change item, which is the small business partnership. That is a $10 million increase above base and a $6,508,000 increase above base in the tails. The next item is an increase to the Rural Policy and Development Center, a $500,000 increase in FY 24-25 one time. Skipping down, the next change item is on line 75, which is a $500 million appropriation to the Minnesota Forward Fund. Additionally, on line 79 is the Small Business Navigators Program at $2.5 million increase and a $2 million increase in the tails as well. Line 81 is the Office of Child Care and Community Partnerships at a $1 million appropriation, and then the same amount in FY 26-27. flipping the page over onto line 84 is the Expo 2027 support, $5 million one-time appropriation. Line 85 is the Small Business Development Center support, a $1 million increase, or $1 million appropriation, and $1 million in the TALES as well. Next, Community Wealth Building Grants, line 86, $3 million, and then additional $3 million in TALES. Line 87, the Neighborhood Development Center, that is $5 million appropriation one time. There are several designated carve-outs that are listed in brackets. I will skip over those. Line 92, the Center for Economic Inclusion, a $5 million one-time appropriation. Line 93, the Canadian Border Counties Economic Relief Program, $4 million one-time appropriation. Line 95, the Targeted Community Capital Project Grant Program, which is $10 million one time. Line 96, the Emerging Developer Fund Program, $20 million one time. Line 97, the African Economic Development Solutions Appropriation, $2 million one time. Line 100, the Enterprise Minnesota Small Business Growth Accelerator, $1 million one time. Line 101, the MNSBIR Incorporated Appropriation, $3 million one time. Line 102, the African Career Education Resources Incorporated, $2 million one time. Line 103, African Development Center, $2 million one time. Skipping down to the next appropriation, line 107, the P Fund Foundation, $750,000 one time. Line 108, which is Quorum, $250,000 one time. Line 190, Initiative Foundations, $6 million for the overall appropriation. And then there are several designated carve-outs for specific initiative foundations that are listed on the lines below. Then line 116, which is $627,000 for the Community and Economic Development Associates. Line 117, the Latino Economic Development Center at $3 million one time. And there are several designated carve-outs. Line 120, which is the Latino Chamber of Commerce, $250,000. Line 121, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, is $7.5 million one time. Skipping down further on line 124 is the South St. Paul American Legion site repurposing item, which is $175,000 one time. Moving down to line 125 is the Empowering Enterprise Program at $125,868,000. That only occurs in FY24-25, so it's a one-time appropriation. There are several designated carve-outs within that for certain entities. And Madam Chair and members, that wraps up the deed portion. We can skip now to the other committees within the other components within the committee's jurisdiction. The next one occurs on line 203 for Explore Minnesota Tourism. That is a base adjustment for maintaining current service levels at $4,630,000 in FY24-25, and then a reduced amount of $1,492,000 in FY26-27. Flipping over the page, on line 204 is the next change item for Explore Minnesota Tourism, which is making Minnesota a top 10 destination. This was the governor's change item. It is $11,800,000. It is a one-time appropriation. There are several designated carve-out for purposes and institutions below it. And then finally, for Explore Minnesota Tourism, line 211, a $2 million one-time appropriation for tourism industry recovery grants. Moving down, there are some several other change items. I want to note to the committee that the Destination Medical Center, the IRRR, and the PFA have no changes in this bill. They are funded at current law base. Line 231 is an appropriation to the Department of Administration for $10 million. The components of that are listed on line 235 and 236. 235 is the Capital Area Transportation Corridors appropriation at $5 million one time. And then line 236 is the Capital Area Community Vitality Task Force account. This is a transfer into that account. It's a $5 million one time, only occurring in the first year. And then line 238 is the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board, better known as the CAP Board. That has a direct appropriation of on line 239 of $150,000. And the purpose for that is to support the task force on line 242 for $150,000. Madam Chair and members, that wraps up the walkthrough of the spreadsheet.
Thank you so much, Ken Savory with Nonpartisan Fiscal Staff. We would be lost without you. So thank you so much for going through that with us. Next up, Anna, if you could go over the DE amendment and the bill itself. Thank you so much.
Chair and members, Mr. Savory has already gone through Article 1, the appropriations article of the DE. I will now walk through the policy sections that are contained in Articles 2, 3, and 4. Article 2, Section 1, beginning on page 21, line 20, this section creates the Office of Child Care Community Partnerships to support child care businesses and increase child care accessibility. This is language from the governor's bill. Section 2, beginning on page 23, line 3, this section establishes small business navigator positions to help small businesses navigate state programs and other sources of funding. This is also language from the governor's bill. Section 3, beginning on page 24, line 4, codifies the Small Business Partnership Program, which provides business development services to targeted businesses, namely those located in Greater Minnesota, in the high-tech field, or those owned by certain groups. This is based on House File 504 from Vice Chair Hansen. Sections 4 through 7, beginning on page 25, line 17, these sections make changes to the Job Creation Fund to lower participation requirements, particularly for businesses in Greater Minnesota, and raise awards for creating higher paid jobs. This is language from the governor's bill. Sections 8, beginning on page 30, line 16, combined with section 15 on page 51, line 16, these two sections codify the Launch Minnesota grant program for startups and repeal the old session law version of the program. This is language primarily from the governor's bill. Section 9, beginning on page 36, line 16, creates the Minnesota Forward Fund to fund private business development, particularly through providing matching funds for federal incentives. This is language from the governor's bill. Sections 10 and again section 15, on pages 40, line 28, and 51, line 16, the repealer there. These are increases to the maximum grant award for the targeted community capital grant project grants. It increases the maximum grant from $1.5 million to $3 million, and it also removes the applicability of capital project provisions in Chapter 16A. That's the repealer section. This is language coming from House File 1163 from Chair Hassan. Section 11, starting on page 41, line 4, creates community wealth building grant program to make low interest loans to community businesses. This is based on House File 318 from Chair Hassan. Section 12, on page 43, starting at line 20, this establishes the Emerging Developer Fund program to make grants and loans for development projects by emerging developers. This is based on House File 1162 and 1289 from Chair Hassan. This is section 13, starting on page 47, line 4. This section creates the Empowering Enterprise Program to give grants to community relief efforts for areas affected by civil unrest in 2020. This is new language from Chair Hassan. Section 14, beginning on page 49, line 26, establishes the Canadian Border Counties Economic Relief Program to assist businesses harmed by the closure of the Canadian border and the Boundary Waters Canoe Area since 2020. This is based on House File 1631 from Rep. Kozlowski. Article 3, which is three sections, beginning on page 51, line 19, create and fund the Capital Area Community Vitality Task Force and appropriate money for road projects within the Capital Area. This is all based on House File 2427 from Representative Claiborne. Article 4 has 10 sections, starting on page 54, line 1. This article makes a variety of changes related to the Public Facility Authority and the Clean Water and Drinking Water Revolving Funds, and comes from Representative Lee. And that completes the policy sections of the bill.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Again, these walkthroughs are really helpful, and so we appreciate your time for that. And Chair Hassan, did you have any comments that you wanted to add before we move on to testifiers?
No, no, Madam Chair. I would just like to switch.
Okay, sounds good. So while she makes her way back here to the gavel, I will begin our testifiers. First up, we have Mayor Jacob Fry from the City of Minneapolis. Make your way to the table, introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you would like, and you can proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jacob Fry. I'm the mayor of Minneapolis. And I am here to testify in favor of House File 3028. A huge thank you to Representative Hassan for her leadership on this particular topic at this much-needed time. I think it's important to recognize kind of where we've been as well as where we've where we are going. During the global pandemic and during the stay-at-home orders, we lost about 1,700 businesses. 144,000 people went on to unemployment. And as we come back right now, it's critical that we do so in partnership. The city is ready to receive and we are ready to allocate funds. In fact, we have a system that is already set up and in place for this Empowering Enterprise program where we're able to do compliance. We're able to receive these funds and get them out in a timely manner to make sure that it's going to the people and the businesses that need it most. And as we've seen, the businesses that were most substantially impacted by COVID-19 are many of the same exact businesses that were impacted by the unrest following the murder of George Floyd. And we're not just asking for funds alone. We as a city have been and are ready to step up and do our part. $12.7 million has already been allocated to around 25 different projects, triggering around $72 million in investment. That is on top of the business and technical assistance that we've been providing, on top of the case management support, on top of the $4.5 million that went to rubble clearance and additional assistance that has helped around 1,500 businesses, and that, by the way, includes fee waivers for those 1,500 businesses. And so this state funding at this critical time will energize our recovery, will help stabilize our tax base, and I would attest that this is a good thing not just for the residents of the city of Minneapolis, but for our entire state. For every $3 that the city of Minneapolis produces, we get back one. We are proud to be the economic generator and the engine of the state of Minnesota. We are proud to provide tax dollars to other areas of our state that need it. And we need to make sure that that pump is primed. We need to make sure that that engine continues to run. This is a huge part of that. So these partnerships are built to align and leverage additional funding. This is not the kind of deal where you simply put in a certain number of millions of dollars and then that is exactly what you'll get back out. These dollars will leverage additional investments. They'll leverage tax revenues that then can go back to your district. And these state investments will be able to increase the economic impact that we are able to have. So together, I really believe that we can come out of this challenging period of our history united I'm proud to stand for any questions, and we truly appreciate the partnership.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We will hold questions and just try to run through the testimony.
Yes.
Up next is Calvin Little John. Please come to the testifying table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Hello, I am Calvin Littlejohn with Tri Construction and Tri Development, and I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for being able to come here and explain to you that as we talk about investment, as we talk about being able to take some economic dollars and put them into, for me, it's North Minneapolis. It is to put them back into developments. It is to put them back into communities that for a long time have been disinvested in. And so it's kind of a pleasure, and it puts a smile on my face, to come here and talk about investing in North Minneapolis and investing into our minority community. So thank you for this opportunity. We were the recipients of those funds for a project that was in North Minneapolis called the 927. It was a building that sat vacant for over 40 years. And so currently, we have redeveloped that building. It is 100% occupied. But here's what I think that is the amazing story behind. When you take those dollars, and we're not talking about gentrification, change coming to North Minneapolis and people that look like me being pushed out. Companies that have been working in North Minneapolis for the last 15 years are pushed out. Now we're talking about how does organizations like Tri Construction and as well a resident of North Minneapolis be included in the change that has taken place within inside our city. We've gone as an organization that have grown because we've got a building, the organization is growing. We went from being able to house 7 full-time employees just within our office to now 15. I think about as we were doing the construction of that project, 51% of those workforce hours went toward BIPOC families. So that's almost $2 million worth of paychecks every single week went back into BIPOC families. If I think about the overall contractual dollars that went back into BIPOC businesses, over 64% of those overall contract dollars went back into, again, the BIPOC community. When I dug a little deeper into Tri Construction's payroll, we had some of the largest contracts as far as work being done on that building. We were 81% of our workforce was BIPOC community. As I dug deeper, we were 47% of our workforce was African American. We have a large population of ours that live in North Minneapolis. And so as we talk about investing in our communities, I'm going to come back around to invest in our businesses. Our businesses will directly invest back into our communities. And so I'm proud to be a North Minneapolis resident that live in North Minneapolis. I have a business in North Minneapolis, and I hire from North Minneapolis. We've grown. We are continuing to grow. But again, I think what we are so proud in being able to contribute back to our city and back to our employees is access to opportunity. The construction industry and where we are, it's a middle-class job. The average carpenter makes $80,000 per year. This is the opportunity. When you take those dollars, right, allow us to stay within our community, grow our business, redevelop properties within our communities. We are the transformation that make these things possible when in our communities, when you empower us to do so. So, again, I won't take up much time, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, and just wanted to tell you what the impact it has had on me, my employees, but most importantly, because I'm a resident of North Minneapolis, my neighbors. I underestimated the pride that my neighbors would have as me being their neighbor, knowing that a couple blocks away, we are redeveloping inside our own neighborhood. And there is this infectious conversation that just takes place within that community. So it is the empowering of overall community when you talk about investing and empowering a community. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next is Abe Damage. Please introduce yourself for the record, share which group you're with, and proceed.
right. My name is Abe Demarch. For some of you guys know me, I have a business in South Minneapolis, and I'm representing today the city of Minneapolis, specifically for the CPDF fund. Lake Street is a home to me and to most of I call them the new American partners, not even immigrants, because I think that's a low term to call us immigrants. We have contributed to the state of Minnesota through our wealth, to our work. That diversity is gone. It's no longer there anymore. If you drive by Lake Street, it's vacant land. Everything is tied up with the fence. We went right after the George Floyd's murder. It broke down to the Lake Street. People of colors, anyone, you have it, you name them, families, workforce, everything is gone. I was here in 2020 through Zoom, and to ask to rebuild our community, the sad thing that I was asked back then was, how come your insurance cannot cover that? Well, I told the lady, I said, did you ask the same question to the rural areas when they get hit with tornado? So, and we have to be fair. I'm not here to specify colors or races. I think we are Minnesotan here. We pay our dues, we pay our unemployment, we're hired from our communities. South Minneapolis has been destroyed. If you guys cannot save it right now, there's no other chances. Now we have the House and the Senate is being by Democrats. I want to hear back. We should not be here sitting again to testify. You should guys write the check, and let's rebuild this city that we have lost. We don't want to go back through that again. I mean, this is just crazy. I have to come and testify. You guys, it's unacceptable to me. My people are suffering. There's no workforce. You drive by, there's a vacant land that you see in there. I'm not here to beg for money. I'm not asking here for better. We deserve it. I paid every dues. Me and my committee, we paid every dues to this state. So now I have to be counted as a second citizen? It's not fair. It's not fair. So if you guys come to Lake Street, you could see a vacant land. Our building was burned down to the glaze, 1:15 a.m. in the morning. Did we cause it? No, we didn't. We stood for the same one reason, as Kelvin mentioned, for the same one reason, disparity, social disparity, economic disparity. This is the time for the state of Minnesota. You have more $17 billion. You could write every one of the check to lift this community up. All the BIPOC, all the people of color, we both North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis, we need to come as one. You guys need to, you know, put your this is legacy for you guys to be in here today. This is the time for you guys to lift up with the high spirit. I cannot be sitting in that chair and look at me like I'm a fool. I'm not a fool. I know what I'm talking about. This is a real story that I'm telling you guys. If some of you guys don't know, come with me. I'll give you a tour. The Latino community, they're all gone. You walk around, my neighborhood is deserted. We did not cause it. It caused, we stood by the same right, the same reason. We did not fight back. 1991, what happened? Rodney King got shot. Every community went out to shoot. We did not shoot. Not even a single fire shot. So I really want to ask today for all of you guys here to really think about it before you even ask a question, before you say even anything to us. Think about it. Think twice. We are the same people here. I'm not coming here to divide. I'm coming here as a unity, all of us. I don't want to even call myself immigrants. I don't want to even call myself black. I don't want to even call color. I am Minnesota. So understand that in your mind. And then please, let's expedite this stuff. It's been 3 years. If I was living in richer neighborhood, 3 days would be rebuilt. 3 years. My neighborhoods are screaming around. That's not fair. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Abe. And we don't think you are a fool. What happened in Lake Street and University Avenue and West Broadway was unfortunate. And we stand with the community, and that's why we're having this conversation today. Thank you. Up next, we have Carrie Johnson. Please introduce yourself, share which group you're with, and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Hassan, Vice Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Johnson. I'm with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. And before I get into this, I just want to say, Abe, we're here with you. I remember being on the same Zoom testimony with you 3 years ago. And so there's a lot to like in this bill, especially working to redevelop the buildings MCCD is located on 31st in Chicago, right in between Lake Street and George Floyd Square. So it's close to home. I also just really want to especially thank you, Chair Hassan, for your leadership on this bill, and Vice Chair Hansen for helping to lift up some of the programs that we've been advocating for a few years now. We are especially grateful to see the inclusion of the Small Business Partnership Program, to codify that program and to finally make it part of the base ongoing and see those funding increases. This program has been stagnant for a decade. And with this increase and especially the ongoing funding, we can continue to serve BIPOC small businesses throughout the state for years to come. This program, through a study that we did, serves on average 81% of the businesses identify as Black, Indigenous, or people of color. The other program that I'm here to speak to today is the Community Wealth Building Grant Program authored by you, Chair Hassan. We are really excited to see this innovative new funding model to help support shared ownership businesses and commercial land trusts. We're just looking forward to seeing how this helps to shape the landscape and preserve affordability for small businesses through the land trust model or create wealth building opportunities for workers. So you have my thanks, and I look forward to getting these passed this session, and happy to answer any questions that anybody has at any point in time in the future. But thank you again.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Lauren Bennett McGinty, Executive Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Lauren Bennett McGinty. I'm the Executive Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. And I would like to share my sincere thanks and gratitude to all of you for including historic funding for Explore Minnesota in the budget this year. Our strategic plan outlines big goals for Minnesota to be a top 10 destination in all four seasons. And with this base budget increase, as well as the one-time funding of $11.8 million over the biennium, we will move closer to our goals and be able to create a more welcoming visitor experience for all. I want to note, however, the absence of funding for Explore Minnesota for Business. The governor and lieutenant governor put forward $12 million recommendation to fund this new division in the hopes of growing Minnesota's share of voice nationally. And as you can see, we need more workers in our workforce here. We also need to shout louder about the great benefits we have as residents of Minnesota. Tell more stories about the livability and economic opportunity of Minnesota and better compete with the more than 24 other states who have deeply invested in doing the same, including North Dakota, South Dakota, and Michigan. Without this funding, we will not be able to market the one-of-a-kind opportunities we have here in Minnesota, including new opportunities to create that were created at the Capitol this session. The fact remains that we as Minnesotans continue to remain overly humble about what we have here that is great. And we cannot keep these things secret any longer, no matter how Minnesota nice we want to be about it. The time is now to make bold moves to address the fact that we have a shrinking workforce and we need to put in the work to bring new people here. Our state demographer said in December of 2022 that the state forecasts almost no growth in the state's workforce in the years to come. However, she did note she is optimistic if we can see growth in domestic and international migration. Explore Minnesota for Business would drive that growth. I urge you to reconsider the inclusion of this division and the one-time funding in addition to the incredible funding that you've already included for us here to jumpstart the vital initiative. We can breathe new life into Minnesota and attract new workers, families, and visitors. We can be a top 10 destination to visit and a number one place to raise a family. Now is the time to invest in sharing our stories louder and prouder than ever before. Thank you so much again for the incredible support you've provided to Explore Minnesota and recognizing our important contributions to the state's economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Errol Worth Latanga, also known as Baba. Welcome, please introduce yourself, share which group you're with, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. Also, Baba Liteng, I go by Baba, and I work for the Neighborhood Development Center, NDC. First of all, I want to express our true gratitude to you for your continued trust in NDC and the work that we've been doing for 30 years plus. NDC also work in partnership with other organizations, so we try to help other organizations as much as we can. We look forward to reaching more businesses here in the Twin Cities. Last year, we reached about 800 entrepreneurs that we've been doing that for many, many years, and we will continue to do that. We also look forward to helping greater Minnesota partners providing high-quality one-on-one technical assistance to entrepreneurs in their communities. NDC has been doing that, and this support is only going to help us to continue doing that and expand what we've been doing. We recognize how hard this session was, and I really want to congratulate you for coming to this conclusion. And for your hard work, you made a promise to the people, and you have fulfilling that purpose. I just wrote a little note that says, if not now, when? So thank you for all what you're doing. NDC is also glad to see that the bill includes the establishment of an emerging developer fund. We're very happy that that is part of the bill. From our experience as an organization with decades of experience in affordable commercial real estate development that has provided both formal and informal assistance to emerging developers, we recommend a pool of funds be set aside for nonprofit administering this program to provide technical assistance to the businesses. For new developers, even those who have already engaged in some level of training, they will also need some technical assistance. So we're asking to continue to support on that. Madam Chair, I want to especially thank you for your hard work and your commitment and your loyalty to the promise that you made. And the rest of the chair, thank you so much for all your work, not just to NDC, but the other community. As I heard Abe speak, while he was talking, my heart was shaking because what he's saying is true. And if not you, then who? So thank you so much for all you're doing. NDC has a track record, and we will continue to do that. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Melanie Tomczak, Chief Technology Officer for BioMed. Please come to the table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. I'm Melanie Tomczak, Chief Technology Officer for BioMed. Thank you, Chair Hassan, Ranking Member Kosnick, and committee members for allowing me to discuss economic and job creation opportunities biomanufacturing can bring to Minnesota. BioMed is a national nonprofit based in the Twin Cities that is a public-private network of 190 companies, universities, community and technical colleges, and nonprofits across 31 states initiated by the federal government. We are part of the Manufacturing USA network, and our mission is to grow and strengthen bioindustrial manufacturing and the bioeconomy here in the United States. In December 2020, Congress passed the 2023 Consolidated Appropriations Act. It included $300 million in federal funds secured by Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum to fund industrial biomanufacturing pilot scale facilities. BioMed is proposing to use $100 million of these federal funds if matched by an equal amount of state funds to make Minnesota the first site in the nation to launch our biomanufacturing innovation network. While other states are lining up, we believe Minnesota is the right place to launch this national initiative. The federal match language in the committee's bill represents the intent of bipartisan legislation, House File 2997, authored by Representative Cowley Herr. BioMed is deeply appreciative of Representative Herr's leadership and the important leadership of the bill's 13 co-authors, including Chair Hassan and Representative Schumacher. As I said, the federal match language in the bill before the committee will yield $100 million match of federal funds from BioMed. This partnership will provide Minnesota the opportunity to create well-paying jobs across diverse communities and launch the economic promise of this rapidly growing sector. This is a significant investment, but it is also a once-in-a-generation opportunity for Minnesota. The annual bioeconomy is estimated to create up to $4 trillion in annual economic activity over the coming decade, and the funding your bill provides Minnesota the first seat at the table. Bioindustrial manufacturing harnesses biological systems to create novel, high-performance chemicals, proteins, and materials that we all use in everyday life. Feedstocks, including corn, soybeans, sugar beets, woody biomass, and even waste streams, are transformed into products using fermentation in large stainless steel tanks, not unlike those you'd see in a craft brewery. With bioindustrial manufacturing, an agricultural feedstock can be converted into cement, bioplastics, durable textiles, high-nutrient food products, and sustainable fuels. Even dandelion roots can be manufactured into a domestic source of natural rubber to make tires. Manufacturing these high-value chemicals and materials in the U.S. will require developing skilled workforce and opportunities for innovative companies to grow advanced technologies, and create new jobs in urban, rural, suburban, and exurban communities across Minnesota. Biomanufactured products and technologies are critical to reaching industry, state, and federal sustainability objectives. In fact, last week, the White House outlined its biomanufacturing goals and believes that increasing biomanufacturing capacity in the U.S. will create jobs, secure the supply chain, and help achieve climate goals. Minnesota's matching funds will result in Bioindustrial Manufacturing Innovation Campus and pilot scale facility unmatched in the country. Right now, American companies are traveling to Europe, Asia, and Mexico to manufacture at pilot scale facilities. We want those companies doing the work here in the U.S. to create jobs, products, and uses for agricultural feedstocks that benefit the bioeconomy. Minnesota is poised to take a critical leadership role in this effort. There's also a strong post-secondary education component to this, and we know that there are career pathways for students from community and technical colleges and universities, and for workers in communities across the state, including on-site training and reskilling. We anticipate that the biomanufacturing campus has the potential to create thousands of jobs through facilities, construction, transportation services, and agricultural feedstock processing. The benefits to Minnesota's workforce and economy will extend to innovative startups, small companies, and large industries in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota. Access to critical pilot scale and commercial scale infrastructure will attract businesses from across the globe to manufacture here in Minnesota and help grow a diversity of businesses and jobs. Chair Hassan and committee members, thank you for your consideration and support of this critical investment of state funds to secure a federal match that will strengthen the future in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't want to be rude and cut anybody off, so it would be nice if people were concise. Up next, we have Dr. Surya Iyer, president of Polar Semiconductor. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Surya Iyer. I'm the president of Polar Semiconductor. Polar Semiconductor is the largest semiconductor manufacturing facility in the state of Minnesota. Chair Hassan and members of the committee, I really appreciate you giving me the time to talk about the Federal CHIPS Act, on behalf of the semiconductor industry, and how the state can leverage that Federal CHIPS Act to make a huge impact on Minnesota and our communities. First, I want to talk about semiconductors. Semiconductors are vital. Almost everything we touch in our daily lives are somehow made happen by semiconductors in them. And if there's anything that doesn't have semiconductors, you'll soon see them have semiconductors in the future. So the reality is that the United States invented semiconductors. We used to manufacture them, but then we outsourced them for the last few decades to Asia, with that technology as well. To an extent that more than 90% of the most advanced semiconductors are made in Taiwan. And beyond that, more than 85% of contract manufacturing of semiconductors is concentrated in two countries, China and Taiwan. So, you know, we were part, Polar is actually an automotive manufacturer. We were part of the supply chain issues that we all dealt with, the disruptions that we all dealt with in the last few years and still to some extent dealing with them. We were, in fact, scrambling to make semiconductors. We were actually also helping make chips that go into ventilators during the early part of COVID. This concentration of the supply chain on the other side of the world is just not sustainable, not tenable. For national security reasons, for supply chain resilience reasons, cannot happen, or should not happen. And that's why the Biden administration recognizes this and put in place the CHIPS law, which allocates $52 billion, $39 billion of which is towards manufacturing in the United States, $11 billion is for technology centers, which potentially could be based here in Minnesota, and $2 billion for defense R&D research. And the the federal government expects that this investment of $52 billion is going to have multiplier effects and also spillover effects. The multiplier effect is already obvious. About $200 billion in projects have been announced across the United States. As states across the United States, state governments have invested $15 billion in CHIPS Act support for these $200 billion in private investments. So these are large multipliers. For example, the investment in the state of Minnesota could be about $2.5 billion. And I do want to take this opportunity to thank Governor Walz, the leadership of the House and the Senate, to put, I believe, $300 million in the target for CHIPS Act support. I think that $300 million can leverage about, in my opinion, about $2.5 billion in investment in the state of Minnesota. That means thousands of high-paid, family-sustaining jobs, and you know, ensuring that Minnesota continues to be the center of technology and advanced manufacturing. So the point that I want to make more than anything else is that this is not just about some semiconductor chip companies. By the way, in Minnesota, there's a very strong ecosystem of these companies. It's not about these companies. It's about how we're going to leverage these investments so we can have a strong workforce development, which makes sure that we're not just going to the same well that we've always gone to, but attracting people who we have not attracted in the past, black, indigenous, people of color, women. We have a huge shortage of women in the semiconductor workforce. Veterans, rural people, we don't attract too many rural people either. To make all of these things happen, we have to work with high schools, colleges, universities across the state. It can't just be just in the local area. We have to work with them. We have to work with job creating, job training type of organizations, childcare organizations, figure out how to provide housing for people who are going to be coming from further away. These are all things that we are not just want to do, but these are all things that the CHIPS Act requires us to do. So it is incumbent upon us to make sure that these investments happen and the spillover effects go across the communities that we all live in the state of Minnesota. I may be running out of time here, so I'm just going to summarize. This is a huge, I think, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I think it's overused, once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-generation, but truly is. This is a trillions of dollars have been invested by the Biden administration, and it is a huge opportunity because we have the right kind of ecosystem here. We can make this happen in this state to build the next generation of skilled workforce, to make a real impact in including underserved communities to come and work in companies like Polar, and leveraging this federal act and ensuring that we have large amount of private investments and that will spill over into our communities, which will make general welfare for the people of Minnesota. So thank you for the time that you've given me, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your time. Up next, we have Tuana Black, founder and CEO of Center for Economic Inclusion. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much. I'm Tuana Black. I am the founder and CEO of the Center for Economic Inclusion. Thank you so much, Chair, for your leadership. Thank you for having us here this morning, and more particularly for advancing bills that will close racial and economic wealth gaps in our state and continue to make the state a place where all people can truly thrive in our economy. At the Center for Economic Inclusion, we work every day alongside partners like many of those who are in this room, and employers and policymakers to equip over 12,000 leaders and over 70 employers with the tools, knowledge, and resources that they need to dismantle systemic racism and build workplaces and economies that truly do work for everyone. We do this in particular so that we can increase the number of Black, Indigenous, Latino, and Asian people who are employed in inclusive employment with wage equity and in jobs that pay family-sustaining wages. Over 85% of the individuals who participate in our programs report that after 90 days, they have taken actions that are systemic in nature inside their organizations that are going to lead toward anti-racist results and an inclusive economy. And after 1 year, that same percentage of individuals and employers are reporting that they have sustained those results and actions and are producing results inside of our economies. Thanks to historic appropriations that have come from this legislature into the Center for Economic Inclusion for our program North at Work, we've been able to invest millions of dollars into Black-led organizations in North Minneapolis who continue to equip, support, and develop African-American men and prepare and then place them into jobs that pay family-sustaining wages. This week's, in fact, I learned just last night, are averaging wages of over $35 per hour after going through the programs that we are able to fund collectively through your work and investment in the Center for Economic Inclusion here in Minnesota. With your continued partnership, we'll leverage the success, the proven results that we've achieved over our almost 6-year history in order to now create and scale this program across the state of Minnesota, investing in businesses owned by our communities and growing them in sectors that are growing inside Minnesota, meeting the market opportunity to ensure that corporations and government agencies who are failing to invest their dollars by spending directly with our businesses have the tools that they need to change those practices and policies and have the relationships with these businesses in growth sectors to grow jobs that pay wages that can help Minnesotans thrive in our state. Together, we can make this the first state that truly becomes anti-racist and is over to overcome stagnant wealth gaps through systemic actions. Thank you so much for your leadership and for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Adam. I'll let you just done it. North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the House Economic Development Committee. My name is Adam Dunnock. I'm with the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, and a lot of my testimony has been said by a few other testifiers, so I promise to be very brief. We testify in support of this bill and your work on these issues because they mean jobs for our members and jobs for our future members, and so I just want to say a word or two about that. We have an opportunity, a unique opportunity to both match federal resources, connect public and private resources in a way that is going to transform industry in the state and across the country, and we're in a strict competition with other states, and I want to share a quick story about that. So I spoke to a colleague of mine last week from Ohio, and he said to me, you know what we're building in Ohio? A $20 billion Intel project that's going to put to work between 8,000 and 9,000 carpenters every day for a number of years straight. The project pretends to be approximately 10 years in length. So the amount of skilled trades people that can both start their career, go through an apprenticeship program, come into the industry. I'm here to just tell this committee and the legislature we're equipped to train future workers. We're the best equipped to bring women, people of color, veterans, people into the industry that aren't here today and keep growing the industry. I want to thank the other testifiers that made a lot of the points that I would make, but we're here in support of jobs and happy to support this bill and look forward to working with you on it, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Maliska Nevada. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair Hassan, and thank you to the committee for allowing me to testify on in support of HF 3028, Empowering Enterprise Program. I'm a lawyer and have a very, very small office on Bryant and Lake. I serve mainly immigrant entrepreneurs, and it is an honor to be able to represent the owner of a quinceañera shop or a person who is working at Mercado Central or Plaza Mexico. I do so with the support of two programs, Elevate Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis BTAP program. I am also on the board of Lake Street Council, and I would like to thank the 120 businesses that supported the letter that we presented in written testimony, along with Gandhi Mahal, Elite Cleaners, and the Barbering School. As you know, Lake Street Council was the first organization that helped my clients and our businesses recover after the pandemic and after the civil unrest caused by the murder of George Floyd. The key to that help was the knowledge that Lake Street Council has built over so many years of each business in the street, the commitment of Lake Street Council to our well-being, and the sense of community that we have on Lake Street. One of my clients said that the best thing that happened after the pandemic and after the civil unrest was seeing the many, many, many Minnesotans come to help us clean the street. The other thing that was key to the recovery was the support that the state of Minnesota, the Hennepin County, the city of Minneapolis, private funders gave to help our businesses survive. And I am exceedingly thankful to each of you for supporting us in that way and for also coming to Lake Street shopping with us and being there for us in so many ways. This project allows us to come from survival mode into thriving mode. As one of our neighbors, our business owners, told me yesterday, the key to a small business thriving is owning its own shop, its own salon, its own restaurant. And your support will allow us to do that in two ways. We have the strength to, as business owners, to be able to buy our shops, but we need two key components. The technical assistance that many of us do not have because we're so new to the U.S. We are new to the dream of owning our own that has been possible by the changes that are going on. And that gap in financing that Catalyst funds like the CPDF fund from the city of Minneapolis and the Wheel of Lake fund have provided. So I urge you and thank you for your support, and I hope that you can help us continue employing our neighbors, continue building a thriving street, and most of all, continue increasing the tax base so that we can reinvest it in our street through being able to pay taxes as owners just as much as we do as in sales taxes and payroll taxes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Sarah Sick, Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Sarah Pasick, and I am representing the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, a statewide group of public, private, and nonprofit tourism organizations and businesses. We want to thank you for including funding for the tourism industry recovery grants in the omnibus budget bill. We also want to thank you for funding many of the governor's recommendations for Explore Minnesota Tourism. You have a letter in your packet that is also signed by the Community of Minnesota Resorts and the Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus. The tourism and hospitality industry was one of the hardest hit industries during the pandemic. And while there's been some recovery, that recovery has not been consistent. Recovery has not been even across the state or across tourism sectors, and we know that full recovery will take several years. We also know that the success of the tourism and hospitality industry plays a strong role in the success of a community. Investing in tourism marketing and activities provides a return on investment in the form of increased local, regional, and state taxes, which provides support for many community services. Increased tourism activity benefits local restaurants and bars, gas stations, grocery stores, theaters, museums, event planners, stage crews, printing shops, outdoor recreation, and many more businesses. The grants funding included in your omnibus bill can be tailored to meet the needs of a local community and highlight the unique businesses, attractions, and cultures in specific marketing campaigns or events. So again, on behalf of the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition and our partners, thank you very much to you, Madam Chair, and the committee, for your support of tourism across the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Anthony Taylor with Cultural Wellness Center. I don't see Anthony. We're going to move on to Peter McLaughlin, Twin Cities LISC. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Peter McLaughlin, the Executive Director of LISC Twin Cities, which is a CDFI that works to provide access to capital for people, places, and projects that lack adequate access to capital through traditional channels. We've been heavily involved with many of the partners that you've heard from today in the recovery work in the Twin Cities. We thank you for the unprecedented level of investment in this bill in recovery and transformative development. The communities know what's needed and are ready to do the work to create local economies that work for everyone. This bill will provide essential tools for those efforts. I'd specifically like to call out, Madam Chair, the proposed investment of $20 million in emerging developers. As two participants in LISC's program demonstrated in their earlier testimony, there's a huge pent-up energy among emerging developers to lead development projects in their communities. The long-standing barriers to their success, redlining, lending practices, lack of liquidity, or timely access to critical technical assistance, these barriers need to be dismantled, and the emerging developers provisions will help do just that. The emerging developers want nothing more than to be part of the American dream and the creation of stronger communities in the process. And in addition, it's going to fuel long-term wealth building and help close the income and wealth gaps. As an organization that's provided numerous grants, technical assistance, and 9 recovery loans, and I don't want to jinx it, but another almost $8 million loan that we hope is going to close on Friday, LISC is supportive of the investment in this bill in many channels, community organizations, CDFIs, business associations, CDCs, and local governments. The Minneapolis CPDF program in particular has been a huge contributor to many of the projects that we've been involved in. They've all been contributors to the projects and that are now moving forward. And so we support that. We think it's an important step forward. We are supportive of this bill and the strong leadership that you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee are providing with these investments. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Taylor Smith-Rova, Redesign, Inc. I don't see. Nope. Okay. And then Natalie Johnson-Lee, Destination Northside. Nope. Okay. Make it easier for me. D'Angelo Skeffison. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you again for your support. I'm here testifying in support of this bill. I'm with NAO Partners, the commercial real estate and urban planning consultant that works with a lot of the businesses and CDFIs and community that are listed in this bill to bring about the change and actually manage that process in an effective and efficient way. Our organization has worked with over 75 small businesses in the last 2 years and principally working along the recovery efforts along Lake Street and University through a number of initiatives listed here, as well as those that are outside of this program circle. Our work has been there when the insurance companies weren't able to cover, or the insurance policies are written in a way that don't fully bring back the value of the buildings that were left. We also have had, you know, a century of depreciation of assets in those communities. And so simply rebuilding what was there is at a different cost than the entrepreneurs who were able to own those spaces were able to do. And so as we look through the nuances of this package, programs that have been elevated already, like CPDF and then the St. Paul equivalent, really act to solve a gap that you can't solve without a century of history and growth for many of these entrepreneurs and family. And so this recognizes that the asymmetries and families and cultural histories come to the forefront when action is required today. And so we support this bill and this package. We also support considering the limits that are placed on the bill around $500,000, as some of these projects simply require more equity-type capital to come into the project to offset the histories that I already mentioned. Additionally, as we look at working continually across the busy corridors in the rebuilding efforts, we have to understand that economic development happens in many different ways in many different places throughout town. So things that are required in North Minneapolis versus South versus University versus the east side of St. Paul, we have to understand that the program in its current flexibility does react and respond to that. And the partners that are currently at the table through the bill also provide that flexibility through their programming. And so, again, thank you for this consideration and look forward to seeing it move forward.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Chad Kulas, Executive Director of Midway Chamber of Commerce. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Chad Kulas, Executive Director of the Midway Chamber of Commerce. We're a member-based organization with a mission to build a stronger Midway. Since our founding in 1919, we have seen many changes along University Avenue, but one thing has always remained true. The corridor depends on the hard work of entrepreneurs. On May 22, 2020, I became the first person to try Bole Express, a fast casual concept of Bole Ethiopian cuisine, as the owner prepared to open his new concept May 30th. But on May 29th, he watched the building that housed both of his locations burn to the ground. That space, along with many others along University Avenue, still remains without a new building. Within days of the civil unrest, the Midway Chamber joined forces with the St. Paul Area Chamber and the St. Paul Downtown Alliance to create one of a handful of funds aimed at helping those who had property damage. Through this process, we were able to help fund over 80 small businesses with over $1.3 million in relief. The funds were donated both by our business community and by current and former residents who sent in $10, $20 just to show that they care. I know some of you folks did a walking tour that summer, and I thank you for taking the time to see it. Seeing the damage up close and walking along University was absolutely gut-wrenching, but needed for me to fully understand the damage. Like many main streets, University Avenue has been revitalized by immigrants and refugees. An estimate in 2017 stated that around 300 minority-owned businesses are in or near the Midway. This proposed legislation would help businesses by creating community wealth. Community wealth helps develop assets where the wealth stays local and helps build more vibrant neighborhoods. It increases asset ownership, creates anchor jobs locally by broadening ownership over capital, and ensures local economic stability. These are all essential in rebuilding our community in a way it can work for more residents. And this proposed legislation would create economic opportunities for long-term residents. As our neighborhood name suggests, we are midway between the downtowns, but our businesses can't be in limbo as they try to rebuild themselves. Our businesses and our residents stepped up, and we asked the state to do the same. Please help ensure us we can rebuild a stronger Midway. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Nasibu Sariva, Chief Executive Officer of African Development Center. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and the member of the committee. My name is Nasibu Sariva, the Chief Executive Officer of the African Development Center. Madam Chair, I came with some prepared remarks, but based on what I've heard from the previous speakers, I've decided to just go with the flow because I support pretty much everything that I've actually been said before. So again, sincere thanks and appreciations for you, Madam Chair, and the committee for everything that you've done into this bill, and including the three really great organization that serves African immigrants in this state. Before I say anything, I want to really recognize my brothers here, Calvin and Ebb, and I support 100% of what you've said. But again, Madam Chair and member of the committee, these are the organizations, these are the companies that African Development Center funds. If it wasn't for the funding that we're requesting from you, the funding that we're requesting from the private sectors, this great work that both of them have been talking about, it would not have been possible. So thank you so much for all what you do. Mayor Fry talked a little bit about the businesses that we've lost in the city of Minneapolis. I just want to remind everybody in this room, Madam Chair, and the committee, most of those businesses that we've lost, they were BIPOC-led organized companies. And when we look into the BIPOC-owned companies, seriously, especially with everything that has happened during the pandemic and the civil unrest, most of them were immigrant-owned small businesses that until today we still don't know what we should do to fix and to make sure that those businesses thrive. Again, the African Development Center is a statewide organization that works within the African immigrants in the whole state, with three satellite offices, one in Wilma, another one in St. Cloud, and in Rochester. So last year alone, we received over $10 million worth of requests for small businesses, and some of them are the ones that have been affected by the civil unrest and the pandemic. Out of the $10 million requests that we received last year, we were only able to approve about $6 million, and out of the $6 million, we were only able to actually close almost $5 million just last year alone. We are still the largest CDFI that serves African immigrants when it comes to small business lending in the country. So we have the capacity to be able to do more work. In about 13 years that we've been doing small business lending, we have deployed almost $25 million, and the community have leveraged for every dollar that we put there for at least $1.50. So over $25 million was invested by the African migrants into these businesses. And again, out of the $5 million worth of loans that we did last year, about $1 million went to North Minneapolis. Madam Chair and members of the committee, to finalize this, Tawana Black, who does a great work, he just a little while ago talked about the challenges of the corporations when it comes to investing into our companies. Let me say this. I'm holding a document. If I sign this document today, I'm going to sign this document today. This private company is ready to invest in our community. This private company believes in an American dream. These private companies, if everything goes well, and I got these final documents this morning as I was coming to this meeting, this investment to the African communities from these private companies could be up to $30 million. They don't want me to reveal this yet. They want to do it by themselves. And this is just the initial investment to our communities. However, these private companies' dollars will not do anything in Minneapolis, will not do anything in St. Paul, will probably not do much in the Twin Cities and Metro. So this partnership with this request, and why I'm supporting this bill, because we will need to leverage these private public dollars for us to be able to continue to make sure that our community also not only lives the American dream, but also thrives. Finally, for every $1 in our program that we've actually put it out there, based on the Wilder economic analysis that they've done, the return on investment is about $6. So you're really putting this money into really the organizations that are really doing a great work. Madam Chair, thank you so very much. Members of the committee, we appreciate for all the hard work that we have all done this year.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe Anthony Taylor is here. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and proceed with the testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Anthony Taylor. I am with the Cultural Wellness Center. We are a South Minneapolis-based organization that's been in the Lake Street Corridor working along 30th Street for 27 years. Thank you for your commitment to making transformative investments in particularly historically disinvested and marginalized communities. And I think that thank you for your acknowledgement of this opportunity. We are excited for the investments you're making. We have the unique pleasure, honor of working on 38th Street, working on Lake Street, and working on Broadway Avenue. And what we see is something that is very important and very similar, that these communities are poised for growth and for economic vitality. And the investments that you are making are critical because this public patient investment actually sets us up for what really transforms our communities, which is this aligned human capital investments. These investments are not investments in streets or buildings. These are investments in people's future. That it is an investment in our commitment to building communities of opportunity. And these communities are communities that have been aligned with communities that have, again, a long legacy of this investment. And so, again, the entrepreneurs, the business owners, the building owners are disproportionately people of color, immigrant community members, and most importantly, emerging entrepreneurs and building owners. So I actually, again, thank you for your investments currently, for a commitment to transformative investment. And as we are looking at making these changes, we ask that you strengthen them, that you really begin to do the math on the money that is generated in these communities, that a $100,000 growth in a community is going to be $600,000 of real economic vitality, according to our partners in DEED. So, again, thank you for the commitment so far and for, again, strengthening those investments as we close out this session. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I know we're almost at time. We're going to see if there are members of the public who want to testify for maybe a brief comment. Is there anybody in the public that want to testify? I see a hand up. Please come to the testifying table and be very brief. Introduce yourself, share which group you're with, and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. My name is Nalima Sitati Munene. I'm the executive director of ACER, the African Career Education and Resources, Inc. We are an issue-based organization, and we work with BIPOC businesses. I don't want to repeat what has been stated. I raised my hand to speak because I wanted to fill in a gap that I think has not been expounded on or talked about. At ACER, we work with a niche that is often left out of the equation, and I want to emphasize the importance of supporting microbusinesses, and I'm also here to speak in support of our appropriation request to continue to expound our work on the work that we do with microbusinesses. Our work is also mainly within the fostering suburbs, again, an area that is rarely talked about, and I really want to emphasize and expound on that, the need to support the fostering suburbs in the work that we do. Most of the businesses that we work with are startups. These are salons and barbershops, ethnic boutiques, ethnic grocery stores that help to close the food desert and challenges that are faced in our communities. When we talk about supporting startups and innovators, we are the ones who are holding the hands of people who are innovating from the beginning stage, and these are mostly ethnic people who are working to transition from their full-time job to really step into the business community, and those resources are very important. I live in Brooklyn Park. Most of our work is in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center and across the region. But if you have read the news about the closing of Walmart, there's a lot of conversation around that. And we're here to ask for continued support to continue the work that we're doing. And we want to continue the work that we're doing in seeking this appropriation and support. We're putting a stake in the ground to say that even as people are deserting our communities, we're not going to desert our communities. What we need is investments to continue coming in these communities. Our communities are not failing. We are being failed. And we want to continue to support our communities, to support the micro businesses. They're the micro engine of our communities, right? They are the ones who are going to grow into small businesses and future big, large businesses and corporations. But we have to start the support for micro businesses, and that is why we're here to support this bill and to ask and to make our request so that we can continue to grow our communities into success. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to briefly speak on this bill? I don't see anyone. All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. I want to remind the committee members to keep the bill and the DE and the spreadsheet in your folders for Friday. Amendments are due noon tomorrow, and we will meet Friday morning at 10:30 in this space. Thank you. With no other business, we are adjourned.